Hey friends, Pastor AJ, and super excited to be back with you. This is actually part two of my interview with Dr. Carl Werner, who has uncovered 150 ape man frauds. He has literally traveled the world, gained exclusive access to the original specimens you read about in your textbook, and even interviewed the top names in what you might call our evolutionary Bible. Today, I'm going to give you just a taste, but you can actually dig deeper into this topic by reading his books or watching the accompanying video series, Evolution, The Grand Experiment. So, Dr. Carl, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be back, and it's great to have an opportunity to meet your audience and to share this crazy good story.
Yeah. Amen. I'm excited to have you. This is an interview that I was really, really looking forward to. And just so, so important. This topic, I think it is so important for this culture, for the younger generation. The last time we talked, you kind of gave a little bit of an intro. You gave kind of an overview of the whole issue of transitionary fossils. You talked about whale evolution. You talked about dinosaur to bird evolution, and you gave a little snapshot of the human fossil issue, you know, with the supposed ape men. And so today you're going to zoom in a little bit on these ape men fossils, and I think this is what I was really looking forward to. It's the nuts and the bolts of the whole shebang in terms of, you know, human evolution. The vast majority of the evidence that's presented to people today. So I know you've got a whole show prepared for us, so I'm just going to turn it over to you and just go ahead and take us on your exploratory journey here.
Okay, thank you, AJ. You know, 2024 is going to go down in history as the year that all of naturalism collapsed. And the reason for this is that naturalism, which says that everything came about naturally, the universe, the earth, the animals, the plants, naturalism has been having problems in each of its areas. For example, the origin of the universe through the Big Bang, they don't know where the matter could come from naturally, since matter doesn't form from nothing. How do you get an organized universe from just an explosion? That doesn't make sense. And then the next step of naturalism is that on the Earth, you know, according to evolution scientists, billions of years ago, that just the dust and the rocks interacted with water and lightning and the first bacteria formed. But that doesn't work. They know that now because proteins and DNA just don't form. Proteins and DNA are the necessary components for a living cell. And so they realize they don't have the goods on how you would start life. And then it's become clear that the fossil record doesn't show evolution. Excuse me. That the seven major animal groups just show up in the fossil record. That is the seven phyla, like the arthropods, the shellfish, the sponges, the corals, and the vertebrates. And then even within the vertebrates, each group just suddenly appears. The bats suddenly appear without ancestors. The pterosaurs appear suddenly without ancestors. The dinosaurs, the seals, et cetera, et cetera. So most people would say, well, why do people even believe in evolution if all that is true? Well, they always said, we know there's all these problems, but we have three good examples of evolution in the fossil record, and that's enough for us all to believe the whole story, even though nothing works up to this point. And those fossils were the evolution of a whale from a dog-like animal. And I personally did the interviews and showed that they had made up the blowholes and the flippers, and you could see that in my first book. Then I did the interviews for the dinosaur to bird evolution, and that just doesn't work. If that's the best example of evolution they have, then that doesn't work. I mean, there's so many problems with that, including finding modern birds with dinosaurs. That's very much of a problem. And the first bird, Archaeopteryx, looks like a bird, you know. So actually, then, all of naturalism, all of our society, the entire way the world thinks is hanging on this idea that human evolution is true because we found the fossils. And there you go. nothing else works to show that naturalism is true, but hey, we got these small ape slowly changing into a human, and we have all the fossils in between. And yeah, it's laughable, but that is the reason most evolutionists believe. It's all hanging on human evolution. But for the last, 27 years, my wife and I have been doing interviews with evolution scientists working in the field of human evolution. We interviewed the top scientists working in this field, Richard Leakey, Don Johanson, Yves Coppens, et cetera, et cetera. And it became apparent during these interviews that there was widespread fraud in the field of human evolution. And that's what I'm going to talk about here over the next hour. I'm going to give you the examples. There's so many examples, I couldn't fit them into one show in our television miniseries called Evolution, the Grand Experiment. I actually had to break them up into four separate episodes. 150 frauds. Besides the frauds that we uncovered, there's 44,000 or 43,000 mistakes that the evolution scientists working in the field of human evolution have made.
Wow.
So we have 43,000 mistakes. We have 150 frauds. And then we also have this problem that the scientists are hiding their fossils from their colleagues. You would think that, that's a crazy statement, but if you tried to go look at the original fossils as a scientist, as an evolution scientist, you were turned down for many, many fossils. The evolution scientists hide their fossils. And so it becomes a non-science because there's no access to the evidence to verify it.
And can I just say, too, really quickly, you threw some numbers out there, 150 frauds. I think you said like 40,000 mistakes. These are the ones that we know of. If that's there, it's one of those things like, if there's one cockroach, there's, if you see one, you got 2,000 of them in your wall kind of thing. These are just the ones that we know of. Creates a lot of doubt.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And I'm very conservative how I numbered these. You could actually double those numbers, but I'm so conservative. Yeah. I turned down a lot of the examples because I couldn't verify what people were telling me. But you have to see these frauds. You have to see these mistakes. And I'm going to jump into it right now and show you why all of naturalism has collapsed in 2024. And, if you're a Christian or a Jewish person or a Muslim or any other person that believes in creation, this video should make you stand up and shout and dance, because this is what we've been waiting for all along. I never thought I'd ever get to say this, but it more or less fell into my lap. And so, and then the opposite side, if you believe in evolution, you got to be honest with yourself. This thing is collapsed. And the last person leaving the room, please shut off the lights, because I'm done with evolution, to be honest with you. When you see, I'm serious. When you see what I'm going to show you, you will be done with it too. So let me go to my slides.
Put the nail in the coffin.
All right.
It needs to die.
So tonight's talk is 150 frauds in evolution. And now I want to define the word fraud, because this is very important. I'm not talking about mistakes. A mistake is when a scientist just messes up, it's not purposeful. It's not deception. It's just the scientist is overzealous. Like, for example, he picks up a donkey skull, as they did in Spain, and then it turns out to be just a donkey skull, but he thought it was an ape man, or mismeasurement, like Raymond Dart did with his Australopithecines, or misinterpretation, like the guy who picked up a dolphin rib bone and said it was an ape man, and that was in the American Museum's Natural History magazine. And just bad science where, nothing is repeatable. You can't really test their dating systems because the dates are always changing. But I'm not talking about, the 150 is not mistakes. No. Now, here are some of the mistakes. There are 42,000 mistaken stone tools. For example, a scientist picks up an ordinary rock, and you would say, that's just a rock, and you say, oh no, it's a stone tool. And this happened over and over and over again. And all the evolution scientists now agree, these 42,000 I'm referring to from various scientists, are not stone tools. So those were mistakes. And also, there has been 232 ape men in the past that have been named, and here's an ape man, and then they've gone away. They're mistaken ape men. No, it's not
sounds
an
like
ape
a,
man.
A mob a hit, like they just take them out.
Yeah, they just took them out. And so, you know, these would be like, you know, the recently buried human that turned out to be an ape man, or a monkey that turned out to be an ape man, or a barnyard animal that was turned out to be an ape man. There's also, besides that, there's been 200 bone tools that have been declared that turned out to be just ordinary bones. For example, people would be picking up like the upper jaw of an antelope and say, oh, it's not an upper jaw of an antelope only. This was used as a scrub brush by an ape man, you know, and all those have been disproven and mistaken. The age assignments, that's just continuously shown to be wrong. They start out with one age and they continuously change the age. There's been, for example, mistaken species names to Homo erectus. Homo erectus has been renamed with different species names 46 times. In other words, it's named Homo erectus, Homo ergaster, et cetera, et cetera. They keep, each scientist that finds what they think is a Homo erectus, they then create another ape man, but it's really the same creature. And same with Neanderthal man, 40 different names.
Unbelievable.
Scientific names for Neanderthal have come and gone, you know, like Homo neanderthalensis or Homo priscus or Homo breelandensis and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But these are not frauds. These are just bad science, you know, guys trying to get famous. And so they say, no, it's not a Neanderthal man. I found the new ape man, see? And not only do they change the species names, but they also have changed the genus names for Homo erectus 17 different times, and the genus names for Neanderthal seven different times. And another example of mistakes would be five different times scientists have said, we found an ape man collarbone, but five times these turned out to be horse toe bones, not an ape man collarbone, or one was a dolphin rib, it wasn't an ape man collarbone, or a couple of crocodile femurs. They weren't ape man collarbones. So you could just see the level of science is lacking here in this field once you get to understand really what's going on. But that would all be forgivable. But I'm talking about fraud. Now, fraud is evil.
Yeah.
And it's ominous and it's dark. It means that the scientist knowingly misled his colleagues or the public by any means to make his case, including hiding the most critical information that everybody would want to know, altering photographs. I'm going to show these altered photographs, altering fossils, starting out with one shape and ending up with a different shape, altering diagrams when you know it's not true, altering charts, and frank lying and giving false reports of what other scientists had reported. So fraud is knowingly deceiving, and there are so many, it's stunning. And as you pointed out, this is just what I have been able to verify, and I had limited access. I think if someone would really try to do full access, it would be much more than this, but this is enough to cancel all of naturalism when you see this list.
And this isn't slander. You're not, you know, when you use the word fraud, I mean, there might, somebody who's entrenched in the evolutionary worldview, they're going to think, you know, oh, this is just a creationist, just being, they're exaggerating, you know, but you spend some time documenting this, that this is what took place here. And that word is very accurate. I appreciate that you take time to explain it, you know, because it's sad. It's very sad that this takes place in the, quote, scientific community.
Yeah, fraud would be libelous unless you can prove that they knew. And that's very difficult to prove that someone knew what they were doing. And, you know, basically each person in the audience is going to have to judge whether you think each of these 150 frauds is fraud. Maybe you'll say, no, there's only 147, or there's only 142, or there's 300, because you could come to that conclusion also. But, you know, it's a libelous term unless you got the goods, and I have the goods. And here we go, okay? Here are some of the frauds by the human evolution scientists. You would recognize these are the big name ape men: Lucy, Tumai, Homo habilis, Homo erectus,
wow,
Prometheus, the Tong Child, Zinjanthropus, Neanderthal man, Homo rudolfensis, or 1470, Homo niger, Piltdown man, of course, we all know about, and Nebraska man, most people don't realize, but the Nebraska man was actually two frauds, not a mistake. And then the scientists who carried out the frauds, this is like a who's who in the field.
Yeah,
of
I recognize
evolution.
All those names.
Yeah. And so, you know, wow. Are you kidding? F. Clark Howell, who wrote the Time Life book, did 10 frauds? I'd like to see that. And Robert Broom did 3, and Ernst Haeckel, 58. What did he do?
I mean, you could basically say those are the men that wrote the evolutionary Bible. It would be the equivalent of us attacking Abraham, Jesus, you know, all the people that we read about in the Bible from a Christian worldview, you know.
Yeah, and they were all making frauds. And if you saw the institutions that they were from, you would shudder. Like the top one, Marcelin Boule, he's the curator at the National Museum of France in Paris. I mean, he's the big guy, you know.
Wow.
Osborne was the president and a curator at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. He's the big kahuna. Same with Matthew. He was in New York City. So these aren't just, you know, one-offs, you know, oddballs. These are the leaders, and you can see how many frauds each of them carried. And once you realize this, it's like, oh my gosh, this whole thing was assembled by some mistakes, but a lot of frauds.
Wow.
They become so many, then you have to start dividing them into, you know, television shows. You have to start dividing them. I'm serious.
All things
you
you've
have
done.
To divide them. Yeah. You have to divide them by continent. You know, where was a fraud scientist? What continent were they on? How many did that continent produce? And so I am now just going to go through the examples, and I would like to go through 150, but I can't talk that fast. It really would require the 4 episodes in our show to show you those 4, but I can give you a taste of how over the top these frauds are. And that's what I'm going to do right now.
And you also have your resources as well. I think that's important to point out, because it is hard. This is a lot of information to cover. And I know you're going to hit some of the major points for us, but you've got a more expansive version of this in your books and the DVD series that you make.
Absolutely. And everything is vetted. The bibliography for these facts is 432 pages long, the bibliography. So I'm not making this up. And if you want to just check any fact, you can just follow the evidence to the bibliography and read the paragraph and to see if they actually said what I'm showing you they said. And I don't just give you the reference, I give you the paragraph of what they said. So you can't be accusing me of like quote mining, where you're just taking something out of context. I give them the whole paragraph. So yeah, this is very vetted. Okay, Homo habilis, I grew up with. It's called the handyman, and it was found by Louis Leakey and promoted by Philip Tobias. And yeah, my whole life it was Homo habilis from 1964. I was 5 years old till basically present. It's still in the museums. And this was a series of frauds carried out by Philip Tobias. Now,
is that Tobias right there in the picture?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's about 90 years old there. He was a big showman, as were some of the other fraudsters. They were big showmen. But so he promoted Homo habilis. Now, one of the Homo habilis skulls that he fraudulently changed was this skull called STW53. Now, here is STW53. You can see there's 14 fragments here on the screen, and that was assembled by Dr. Tobias's colleague, Dr. Ron Clark, into this skull. Can you see how the pieces would?
I can. I brought this up in the first episode that we shot. What people don't understand is this basically sums up the supposed, skulls, fossils, whatever they call them. They're fragments and they're pieces, you know, and they interpret that and they create their molds. But this is what the originals look like.
Yeah. So he had his colleague put this skull together. Now you have to follow this. So see this skull, this is the front view, the two eye sockets and the nose.
Yeah.
Now, if you go over here, this is the underneath view where the spinal cord comes in and the upper teeth are seen from below. And then this is a side view. This is all three of these is the same skull. Do you understand that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So all three are the same skull. And when he was done with it, Dr. Tobias was very displeased with Dr. Clark. He says, this thing is too small. And see, Dr. Tobias was making the case that there was a creature called Homo habilis. By the way, it really was an Australopithecine. You'd have to read my book to see the evolution scientist making the case that it really was just an ordinary Australopithecine. But see, Australopithecines and apes have only a brain size of 500 cc's, and humans, generally, the brain is between 1,000 and 1,400 cc's. So it's 500 versus 1,000. So if you're going to create evolution using fossils, you have to come up with an animal that's halfway between 500 and 1,000. And this was what Homo habilis was. It was called a large-brained ape man. It was between 600 and 700 cc's. And that was the whole emphasis, that this is an ape man because it is large brain. And that's how they defined it.
And just so people understand, an Australopithecine, like you're saying, I mean, that we would say that's an extinct ape. That's an extinct species of ape. So basically what you're saying is they took an ape skull and they stretched it, they embellished it intentionally, like you pointed out, to make it look like an ape man, a half ape, half human.
Yep. And wait for these next few slides because this is stunning. Okay, so you got the three views there. Okay, now we're going to go over to these two skulls on the right. And now Dr. Dr. Tobias has his colleague. First, he asked Dr. Clark to enlarge the skull, and he says, no way, Jose. I put it together based on the anatomy, you know, like where pieces fit together, you put them together. Where they're in the midline, you have to put them in the midline. There's no moving them around just because you want a bigger skull. So Dr. Tobias went around Dr. Clark's back and got one of his graduate students, Dr. Darren Kerno, to take this apart and to reassemble it and make it a larger ape man. And you can see
that's a noticeable difference. That is a substantial.
Yeah, you basically go from around 500 to around 700 or 750 cc's. And you see how he did it. You see all the white plaster here compared here. And then you see there's some plaster here, but there's even more here. And so you could say this is a mistake that he was just overzealous, but his colleague, Dr. Clark, said, no, this is fraud. And because he said, I explained it to him, you can't enlarge it, and he wouldn't have it, and he just went ahead and did it anyway, he said it's a fraud bigger than Piltdown. So let's watch his...
Let me say something about that slide real quick. That's fine right there. You have the skull on the right, which is the one that he enlarged it to, which is clearly fraud. I mean, he tells the guy to go and enlarge it so that it can be an ape man. But the one on the left, I think, and this is just me, it's the skeptic in me, but it's I think that the fact that is what a lot of evolutionary science is built upon, that by itself is highly suspect.
Because yes, it is.
How do you know that is even, how do you know what that is? It's so many pieces and fragments, and that it really, to me, just from a, if I'm putting my skeptic hat on, like, how do we know that that is even an ape skull? How do we, I mean, just because there's so much, there's just so many little tiny fragments and things, you know, I mean, that's just the skeptic in me, I guess, you know.
Well, it's good skepticism. And you know that the best friend of an evolution scientist is a partial fossil, because if an evolution scientist finds a complete fossil, he has no wiggle room. He can't make an intermediate. But if he has a partial fossil, in just one little fragment, it's the best, because then you can create the ape man what you think it looked like, and that's bad science. And we should not accept any fossil that's not complete at this point. Show us the complete stuff, and show us the stuff that we can actually have access to.
Right,
because
right.
if you're not going to let us examine it, it's you got something up your sleeve, you know?
My goodness.
Okay, so I'm going to now show you the video from our video series of his colleague, Dr. Clark, declaring that this enlargement was a fraud.
Dr. Ron Clark accused Dr. Tobias of committing fraud by enlarging an ordinary Australopithecine skull, STW53, to create a large brain Homo habilis skull. He characterized it as a forgery, similar to the Piltdown Man fossil forgery.
The Piltdown forgery actually was very clever. The STW53 forgery by Kerno and Tobias was stupid.
In a recent interview, Dr. Clark described the events that led up to the fraud.
Philip Tobias summoned me to his office and he said, I want you to make a new reconstruction of STW53. And I said, oh, why? And he said, well, I'm not happy with the brain size. It's too small. And I said, but that's the way it is. It can't be made any bigger. The anatomy shows that was the size of the brain case. He wanted it to be a Homo habilis. In fact, he kept publishing this as a Homo habilis. He then asked a research fellow that he'd just appointed there, Darren Kerno, he asked him to make a new reconstruction. And what Kerno did was he separated out this near contact here. He separated it out by 8 millimeters and made this wider. He flexed the parietal occipital contact here. He flexed it upward to make it bigger. He took apart other pieces as well and expanded it. And he moved this frontal bone forward to make it very elongated. It's totally false because there was no justification for what they did. It was simply Philip Tobias's ambition to make this into a Homo habilis.
That's stunning, isn't it?
Unbelievable. I mean, it's comical when you look at it. It's really just, it's unbelievable.
And the further you go into my slides here, you're going to get more emotional and where you're like, I'm done with evolution. When you see the level of fraud. So I want to keep going if you don't mind, AJ.
Please do. Yeah. And that's my hope is that, you know, cause I went through your book already and, you know, I was ready to, myself, I put the final nail in the coffin a long time ago. My prayer is just that the skeptic that Lord willing is watching this, they're just, you know, they're being influenced by what, by the evidence that you're presenting here, you know, giving it a fair shake.
So Philip Tobias, that was only the first of three frauds with Homo habilis. He actually carried out 7 frauds, but 3 of them were enlarging Homo habilis skulls. The next one was even more bad. It was the type specimen for Homo habilis. Now, the type specimen is what everyone will measure your fossil from. It's the first fossil that you find in the field that you say, okay, here is what Homo habilis is, and this is his type specimen, and it's the measuring stick. So you don't alter it, you don't change it. everybody's going to bring their fossils to your museum and compare them side by side to what you have. And really, the type specimen is sacrosanct. You know, you just don't touch it. So here is his published photograph of the type specimen of Homo habilis. This was found by Louis Leakey and Mary Leakey in the 1960s. And who would think there's anything wrong with this picture? This is his published photograph, the official published photograph from his monograph, okay? Now, Debbie and I had the opportunity to fly to Dar el Salaam, Tanzania, and photograph the original fossils from Olduvai Gorge. And at the time, I did not realize that there was a fraud. I just took picture after picture after picture. When I got home and placed my pictures next to his pictures, I realized that there's something really wrong with this one. Again, he's trying to enlarge another Homo habilis skull. Now, you'll have to forgive me. You can tell, but my fossil, the photograph is taken from a slightly different angle because I had no idea I'd be comparing it to his photograph. So the camera's a little centered, a little higher. So it just looks a little bit different, but you get it. It's the same fossil.
Yeah.
So when I got home and put these two pictures next to it, it's like, what is going on? Where is fossil B, the fragment B of this skull piece of OH7? And it's like, there is no fragment there, but his skull has it. And I know I didn't miss it because we photographed the originals. We went through the collection very carefully. And the more I looked at his photograph and more I looked at it, I realized B is plaster.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you see that? You see that?
Yeah.
It is plaster. You can tell it has a texture of plaster.
Wow.
And it's like he enlarged the type specimen to make it bigger so he could have a large-brained ape man. But that's just one of the fossil frauds on this 087.
And so he published the black and white photo on the left, you said.
Yeah.
That's the one that was published and presented as the original fossil.
Right.
Am I correct?
That is right. That's the first time people got a good look at it.
Wow.
And it took them a while. And you know what? Then you start looking at my picture and then you start realizing there's something else odd about this. Look at fragment A. It looks fine in his black and white. But on my photograph, A looks like it's a different color than the rest of the skull.
Yeah.
Also, it's attached not with a puzzle-like fit that would indicate, yeah, you got the fossil in the right place, but with a straight line. And there's a lot of fossils that have straight edges that you could attach to a skull. And so you'd have to be really sure that this is a match. It's possible you could have two different colors if, like, fragment A was sitting out in the sun and the rest of the skull was buried. Yeah, they would be a little different, but you'd have to be assured that they fit with a puzzle-like fit. So now I'm going to take this 087. I think this is a right skull fragment, and I'm going to flip it over, and we're going to look at the inside, okay? This is the outside surface. Now, here's the inside surface. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm just flipping it over. Okay? Flipped over. Now, A looks like it's totally bogus. It looks like it's not a part of this.
Wow.
And then he adds the white plaster there, the red arrow, to fill in and hide the fact. And if you look at where the red arrow is pointing to on my fossil, he photoshopped that black on his picture under the letter A. See how it's dark?
Yeah.
So it doesn't look like plaster there. You see?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
He photoshopped it. He added this, and it's very questionable. That's all I would say.
Yeah, the whole thing is very questionable. I mean, it's really...
I would think to the
person that has an ounce of intellectual honesty that they have to see how this creates a lot of doubt in the science behind evolution.
And because this is the typical evolution scientist, this is how they're doing their work. So let's go over, this is the right skull piece. Now let's go over to the other, there's two pieces. There's another piece on the left skull piece. Here it is. I'm sorry, that was a left. Here's a right. So here's a different fragment, and the same thing happens. If you look at the outer surface that on the top and the inner surface on the bottom, when you look at the inner surface close up, look at that. Fragment C, and this is another fragment that's added with a straight line. And again, it doesn't look like it fits. And you could scrutinize this more, but those are the ones that I would call definitely bogus.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious when you look at it.
And then I was like, okay, what is going on? So now I had to read his boring 400-page monograph about this skull. You know, like, you want to get sick to your stomach, you read one of these monographs. You know, how much can you say about a fossil? Well, here's his monograph.
Well let me take this a step further real quick with what you're showing us right now. That is, those are the only pieces that he has of that particular skull. Is that correct?
Of this particular skull, yeah.
So they're taking those pieces and they're developing that into a whole specimen.
Yeah, because then he measures it and says it's large-brained. It's more than 600 cc's based on this fragment. But the plaster was added. All these fragments were added.
Oh, my goodness.
It gets worse. Then in this boring monograph that I had to read, I found this statement. He says where these pictures are is somewhere else in that book. He says, the pieces of 087 were pieced together from a number of fragments found separately.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
See, what does that mean? And he never explains it. And that means that the bigger piece could have been here, right now at your feet, but these others could have been 500 yards away.
In a different animal. I mean, who knows what they are?
That's right. It could be, well, definitely, I would say definitely a different animal, whether they could be a different species. And no matter what, he's adding to a fossil to make it bigger.
Oh, my goodness.
And hold on to your seats, because that's only his second fraud of Homo habilis. Now, here's his third. He has another fossil skull from Old Divide that he says it's a large-brained Homo habilis. And it's this one, 0816. Now, the right is what I photographed. This is a real fossil. And you'll notice the bones are all tight. Like, these are all tight. And there's not a lot of room between many of the bones. But look how he reconstructed it. For example, see this white space where my arrow is pointing to here?
Yeah.
See, there's no space there. You see this white space here? And he did it twice. There's white space here and here. These touch. And you just go through this fossil point by point, and you realize, look how wide he got this skull to make it large. And he enlarged it artificially and then declared that he had found a large-brained ape man. And you know what? The scientists are at the highest level in this field will tell you that Homo habilis is not Homo habilis. It's just an Australopithecus, you know, and it's not large.
Even the one on the right, the fact that is presented as anything. I mean, it's so many bits and pieces. It just infuriates me.
Yep. You would
that's
be hard
presented
pressed.
As evidence for anything.
Yep. You would be hard pressed to even make conclusions about that. So that was Philip Tobias. We just have done three frauds. We have 147 to go. So I hope you have a big cup
of coffee. Oh, my
goodness.
Yeah. Well, I think it's good. It's worth mentioning. This is basically par for the course. Am I correct in saying that? That this is kind of, this is what a lot of it's like. The science is like.
Well, this and the mistakes.
Okay.
Yeah. When you put them all together, so many of them are mistaken, you know, where they put the fossils together wrong. But many of them have been frauds. And then the third category is that they're fragmentary and, you know, you can make anything up. And the fourth category is that they won't let their evolution scientist colleagues examine their own fossils.
My goodness.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Well, you're saying that tongue in cheek, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they don't want their colleagues to say that's not an ape, man.
It's just so obvious that they doctored them. I mean, of course they don't want people looking at them.
Of course, yeah. All right, this next one, I'm going to make it a little lighter. It's a diagram, but this one is actually more important. And this is F. Clark Howell. He carried out 10 frauds with his ape man chart. Now, we interviewed him, and this is a chart up on the upper right here. It was in the book Early Man. And it basically showed a small ape on the far left, about the size of today's small ape called a gibbon, going into modern man. And the title of this chart in this book is called On the Road to Homo Sapiens. See, this is very important. Now, this is, far as culture changer, this one changed culture more than anything else, because everybody has this, a variation of this in their mind about human evolution. But this was a fraudulent display, and 10 of these animals are fraudulent. 10.
Wow. Not two or three or 10. Like, that's pretty much the whole chart, just about.
Yeah, there's 14 ape men there, and 10 of them he knew were not ape men. And by the way, these are just the 10 frauds that he knew of, plus there's a couple more frauds that he wouldn't have been aware of. So I'm just saying his frauds right now, because really the whole chart is X'd out right now. But let's just go through his frauds. So starting on the left, this Pleopithecus looks indistinguishable from today's gibbon. And if you ever saw a gibbon, which most people don't know what a gibbon is, it would, you say, oh, that's Pleopithecus. But see, he acknowledges that Pleopithecus is not an ancestor of a human. It's an ancestor of a gibbon. Now, I don't think it's an ancestor, because that's evolution thought. But he's saying it's not on the road to Homo sapiens. It's on the road to the gibbon, which is a, you know, is a weird little ape. So he knows that's not on this chart. It shouldn't be on this chart, but he puts it in there. Same with Proconsul. It doesn't look like a gibbon. It looks like a chimpanzee. And he says it's an ancestor of chimpanzees, not of humans. Yet he puts that one in there. So the next one is Dryopithecus. He knew Dryopithecus was not a human ancestor. And you'd have to see our movie. We have the interviews for that to verify that. But his graduate student said that he did not believe Dryopithecus was an ancestor to humans. So, but he puts it in there anyway. And same with Oreopithecus. It's not on the line of evolution to humans, but it's on a, quote, side branch, which means it's not on the road to Homo sapiens. He knows this next one on the left, Paranthropus, which, by the way, Paranthropus doesn't look like that. It is a gorilla-like animal. And if you saw the skull, you'd say that's a gorilla skull, but it's not. It's Paranthropus. And he says that's an evolutionary dead end to man's ancestry. In other words, it's not on the road to Homo sapiens. And then the last five animals in the chart before modern man are all Homo sapiens.
Wow.
And he knows it. He writes it in his book. And I have,
but the drawings there make them look like they're half ape. I mean, so
yes, they do.
And that's, how would you, yeah, very misleading.
It's very misleading. And, you know, if you are on the road to Homo sapiens, you only get to put one Homo sapiens on the chart, on the road to Homo sapiens. You don't do ape man, then Homo sapiens. You don't get to do that. So you just embellished your diagram to go from an ape to a man, but 10 of the 14 he knew were not ape men. They should not have been in that chart, and that he was aware of. And you can verify that.
Wow.
And wow. Everybody thinks of human evolution in those terms.
That is absolutely, that's powerful. Just to see that chart right there, that's, wow.
And I almost missed it. You know, I've been working on this for 27 years. But once I started counting the frauds, I started to think about this chart, because I was like, when we interviewed the evolution scientists, they say, no, Dryopithecus isn't an ape man and Pleopithecus isn't an ape man. I was like, I wonder what Clark Howell knew. And so I just went back, even though I'd read the book once or twice, I went back and tried to see, did he know that these weren't on the line? And lo and behold, he did.
Hey guys, Pastor AJ here, and thanks for visiting my channel. If you don't mind, I'm going to take just a sec to tell you about Gospel Ministries and our mission to help others experience, demonstrate, and share God's great gospel. If you want, you can pick up some of our merch in our YouTube store to help you communicate that same gospel message. And I'd love it if you would consider subscribing to this channel so that we can challenge your Christian walk through solid biblical teaching as it applies to culture and other issues. In addition to that, you can go to PastorAJ.com where you can consider partnering with this ministry and sign up for my weekly email newsletter. Don't forget, I'm on all other social media platforms at Pastor AJ Platt. One other item that might interest you has to do with a topic that I've studied pretty extensively. It's my book, End Times Mission, that will give you a solid education on the different views of eschatology and, more importantly, your role in Jesus' kingdom while we wait for his return. This book covers the historical origins of popular end times teachings as it guides the reader to Christ's current reign in a post-millennial worldview.
Now, we've only done 13 of the 150. We still have 137 to go. So,
newsflash, we won't get through 137 in this podcast episode, so make sure you take advantages of the resources that Dr. Carl has available for you.
But each of these becomes even more perilous and more ridiculous. And the next one is Richard Leakey, again, a well-recognized name, and the Turkana Boy, which is one of the most famous fossils. And this too was a set of frauds. And Richard Leakey and his worker Kamoi Kamu found this skeleton. It's a full skeleton. We interviewed both of them. Well, let me just say this. Kamoi Kamu, he was very aged. He didn't give us an interview. We just talked to him. It wasn't but on camera, but it wasn't worthwhile. And Richard Leakey, it was an email interview. But I verified that this was fraudulent. And you're going to say, well, what are you talking about? So here is Homo erectus. This is in the museum, but this is all plaster copy. It's not the real one, but it's good enough. The point is if you look at it from the neck down, this looks like a human skeleton. And believe me, as a physician, I know what a human skeleton bones, you know, the bones look like. It just looks so human. And it's like, well, that's not an ape man. But he's making the case that it's not human, that it's an ape man. So why is that? It's the skull. And if you see here, this is the skull from this picture. You see the skull is here.
Yeah.
But now here's his official published photograph that Richard Leakey published of this skull. And now you understand why it's an ape man, because look at the nose area here, the lower face.
Oh, yeah.
It sticks out. See, you know, like chimps have these big muzzles, whereas humans, the face is kind of flat. You see?
Yeah. And Well, that proves evolution right there.
There you go. It proves evolution. Yeah. Thank you for that tongue in cheek again. And you know, when I photographed this fossil, the original in Nairobi in the vault, something just got nauseating for me and I couldn't quite figure it out. But it's like, oh man. And I think my thought process was, I know that from the neck down, it looks human. And yet when I actually saw the skull, I thought, oh man, this thing is really ape-like. It kind of does look like what you could imagine an ape man would look like. But I'm never easily put off, because a lot of times these, you have to go through 6 or 7 layers to find the real truth.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what I did is when I got home, I took this picture that of the skull that I was disturbed by and put it next to his photograph. And then I realized this is amazing fraud.
My goodness. Point this out to you. I mean, if I could just say too, from the perspective of somebody who's, you know, I like to think I'm objective, at least I'm critical. I'm a critical thinker about what I'm looking at. I don't have the expertise you have, but when I look at that original photograph, even the black and white one, something looks, it looks off to me. Like it looks to me, it looks like something was shifted with the face area. It doesn't look like a natural skull to me when I look at it.
And maybe that's why I got nauseated. I was just like, wow, if you look at this skull, the first thing you're drawn to with your eyes is where the missing bones are. See the white plaster here? That shows you where bones are missing, you see? See, there's bone missing here. Bone's missing here. So it's like, okay, well, that's what your eyes are always drawn to in this picture. But look at this. This is what the can of worms got opened here. When I put it next to my thing, is there's no white.
And there should be, right? Because they would be obligated to show what's plaster. And correct? Is that?
Well, the plaster can be shown as white or black on a skull. Like, see, here's plaster, it's black.
Okay.
Here's plaster, it's black. You can do white, black, red. It doesn't matter. Just so you can show your audience where the bones are missing. But his picture should have been not white, but black. Because he took that picture of this skull. We both took the picture of the skull.
Yeah.
So what he did, and you'll understand why he did it in just a bit, is he photoshopped some of the missing bones, but not all of it. So your eyes would be drawn. This is my conjecture, but you follow this. Just stick with me. He paints it white, and so you think, oh, well, there's a few bones missing, but yeah, that's an intact skull. When you get to my skull, all of a sudden, wait a minute. Yeah, these are missing. And it looks like there's no interpretation there. It just, that's all you'd have. Uh-huh. Then what is this stripe of plaster here? Because AJ, an 8-year-old boy, and this is supposed to be an 8-year-old boy or 12-year-old boy, has no space between the frontal bone and the parietal bone. There is no space. And yet there's plaster filled in here. And why is there plaster? I don't know. And then you look at this better. Now, it's more well seen on the video because we rotate the skull 180 degrees on camera. You see the whole thing. But this is plaster. And this is plaster.
That's a different color. Is it just me or is that the face a different color than the rest of the skull as well? Is that?
I think it's okay. You know, I think it's all within the variations because sometimes these sit out in the dirt or in the sun.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that. But I do have a problem that he has effectively disarticulated the front of the skull from the back of the skull this connection. This connection and this connection. And it gets worse. And you now understand that he could have, if this is truly a human, he could have swung this out. In fact, if you follow his diagrams and his photographs, it swings out over time from his original article in Nature to his monograph. And finally, I contacted Dr. Richard Leakey by email and the curator of the museum in Nairobi. And I asked him, one, why is the photograph have white, but my photograph has black? Was this photoshopped? No one could answer that. Number two, it appears to me, and I wrote this to Richard Leakey, it appears to me that the face is sticking out more than I would expect for an animal that looks fully human from the neck down.
Yeah.
Is this, what do you think of this? And this was bizarre, this email, and you can read the email in the bibliography. He writes back and say, yeah, it's wrong.
Wow. So if he admits that that's wrong, then he's saying it. Would this look, this is basically a human skull? Is that what we're looking at here?
Yeah, I think Homo erectus is Homo sapiens. There's a lot of humans that look just like Homo erectus, a lot of them. And, but this one was doctored, and the Leakeys have a history of moving the face either in or out. They can swing it out if they want to make an ape, and they can swing it in if they want to make it more human. His father did that with Zinjanthropus, which was in National Geographic in 1961. And then Richard Leakey not only did it with this one, but he also did it with 1470. He swung the face. So
that's where my eye goes that makes it look unnatural to me is the gap that's between the nose, I guess where the nose and the eyebrows would connect.
Right here?
And even above that a little bit, I mean, because the normal skulls don't have that large gap area up into the left here. From there, where that right where the bridge of the nose would meet the. It looks like it should be going up into the eyebrows. Yes, am I right on that?
Yeah, but that would be missing bone. So that would be power.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be missing bone, and that's acceptable. But all the other, you can't Photoshop a fossil photograph for your monograph, the official monograph, and not tell people that it was Photoshopped.
Right.
And then you'd have to a hard time explaining why you didn't Photoshop all the plaster for suggesting it's missing bones. See, that's fraudulent.
Absolutely amazing. It really exposes so much of it's exposes so much of the subjectivity. I think people take for granted that scientists are being honest with you, that they're presenting objective information. And I think this shows really the speculative nature of human evolution.
Yeah, on steroids. Speculation on steroids, you know, wildly imaginative.
You can make whatever you want. That's kind of what my takeaway from this is you can just, if you want a skull, you can make one, you know?
Yep. If you want to make an ape-man skull that looks somewhere between a human and an ape, you can make one. Same with the skeleton, yep. I'd like to do Dr. Johansson's frauds with Lucy, if you don't mind.
Please do. He's one that I know of. That I did a short video on my channel specifically about him. The short videos are just less than a minute, so it just kind of showcased how he a couple of the things he did with Lucy. I mean, you obviously go into greater detail, I think, with the whole topic, but he's a big name. I mean, that Lucy, that's a big deal right there. The Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds, right? Isn't it connected to the song?
Right. They named the creature after that song because they were listening to it at the camp in Afar, Ethiopia. When they found it, they were so excited. They had the tape deck playing that song, and that's how she got her name, listening to that song in the Afar desert. Yeah, but now you're going to have to redo your videos or make some more ones, AJ, because there were three frauds associated with Lucy. Three. It's not mistakes.
Well, at least for right now, I'd have to make 150 short videos because there's 150 frauds, you know, so.
Get ready.
Question is, could I fit all those into 150 short videos?
I think, you'd have to be 5-minute videos. Oh. So this is how Lucy started. In 1973, Dr. Johansson found this knee joint. And 1974, he found this skeleton. The beige is real bone. The black is, you know, filled in plaster. And it was spectacular because he had found, 50% of the skeletons. I forget the percentage, but it was a lot of bone. And his arguments went like this. And you can see this argument in his 3-part documentary on Lucy that was on Nova Television. You can also see it when we interviewed him. He said the same thing. And he also, in his book, reiterated the same thing, that when I found the knee joint, I said, this is spectacular, because even though this is a very small creature, it turns out about 3.5 feet tall, like the size of a chimpanzee, oddly, the knee joint looks human. And so what 3.5-foot ape could have a human knee? But that would mean that if she has a human knee, human-like knee, that she walked upright. And so it's just not an ape, it's an ape man that walked upright. And so when he found the rest of the skeleton, you notice that he doesn't put her down on all fours like an ape,
yeah.
But he sits her up because of the knee. See, the knee is the whole basis for this arguments that Lucy was an ape man.
Now, am I reading that correctly? He doesn't have the, what would that be, the femur?
He has it on the other side.
Okay.
And see, if they have a bone on one side, like this right humerus,
yeah,
you can, if you don't have the left one, you just copy this and make a mirror image.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So he has, you know, some fragments of the lower bones. He has a pretty good femur. He has a pretty good humerus, but it's definitely not complete. There's a lot of room for interpretation. But the whole story rests on it's a human knee.
Now, maybe by the way, it actually was a human from another,
but it was very
specimen
was very,
altogether, right?
It was very small, though, and so. And by the way, if I gave you a human knee and an ape knee, and I say, tell me which one's ape and human, it's very difficult to assess these things. I could not tell you that this is a human-like knee, even though I'm a physician, and that makes me nervous that he might be pulling the wool over my eyes, but. He is a paleoanthropologist. We're going to give him one that this is a human knee, okay? And he said everybody has looked at it and all an anatomical analysis in the white here, all analysis of the knee joint indicates it's a ape man that was capable of upright bipedal posture. In other words, this knee indicates it was an upright walking ape man. Okay. It's a little bit of a stretch, but let's go with it. You know, Debbie and I then flew to Paris to interview his partner, Yves Copin, who was the co-director in 1973 of the Ethiopian Afar dig where Lucy and the knee joint were found. Okay. So when we flew to Paris, I didn't know what I was looking for. I'm just going to ask questions. Tell me about the knee. Tell me about the hip. Tell me about this. Tell me about this. Cameras are rolling. And the most stunning interview of my life came up. And you can see this in our video series. We asked Dr. Copens, the knee of Lucy, was it ape-like or human-like? Knowing that he's going to say it's human-like and therefore walks upright. But he doesn't. He says the knee joint of Lucy is an ape-like knee. It's like, did you just say that?
Yeah. I mean, why am I not surprised?
Because for 40 years, Dr. Johansson has been building the case based around the knee joint. And he told this fraudulent statement that all analysis of the joint indicates it's from an upright walking creature. And yet it isn't all analysis because even his partner from the dig site, Yves Copens, says, no, it's an ape. I about died. I had to pick my jaw off the floor.
That's incredible. I mean, it's just par for the course. You know, that it seems like. The more you dig into it, and I think people, if they read your book, they can see, because you chronicle the whole history, really, of the first 100 years of evolutionary fossils. And this really is par for the course. I mean, it's just, they say it's one thing. It's kind of like what do they call that when a person, a sleight of hand.
Yeah.
You catch them looking over here, you're doing something else over here, and then it turns out what you were doing over here isn't what you were saying. It was in the first place, but now we're on to the next thing. You know, it's like, okay.
That's exactly right. You know, and we also interviewed Dr. Dwayne Gish, who is a creationist who attended Dr. Johansson's lecture about the knee joint in Berkeley. And we recorded this interview. And Dr. Gish said that at that lecture, Johansson presented evidence that the knee joint was ape.
Wow.
Johansson's own, computer analysis. And yet he makes this statement that all analysis of the joint shows that it's from a human-like creature. Okay, that's just the first fraud of Johansson. We got two more. The next fraud has to do with what they call the Laetoli footprints from Tanzania. Laetoli, Tanzania, the footprints. Here's one of them, and it's a trackway.
Like this one, it just has fraud written all over it from the get-go. I just feel like I don't even know what you're going to say here, but I just feel like it's just it already looks fraudulent.
this one is so bad. It's just so bad. So anyway, the Laetoli footprints are human-looking, And they say that this is evidence that Lucy walked upright. Now, hold on. Laetoli in Tanzania is 1,000 miles from where Lucy was found.
Oh.
Now, you got to understand the rationale. See, why would you say Lucy walked upright when the footprints are, you know, two countries away? It's because at Laetoli dig site, where these footprints are, the only creature they found there, fossil-wise, was other Lucy-type fossils. Now, Lucy is called Australopithecus afarensis. And so it wasn't the Lucy original fossils, but they found other afarensis fossils that look like the Lucy fossils in Tanzania at this dig site. And there were no other animals. There was no humans found there. There's no other ape men or no apes, just these footprints and the Lucy type bones. So he argued, who else could have made these footprints since the Lucy bones were the only ones found there? Now, that's a little bit of a hollow argument because, you know, maybe you just didn't find the human, or, you know, how do you know that that animal made those footprints? It's a guess, but I wouldn't call that a fraudulent statement. I'd just say, you know, it's a little hollow, it's kind of weak, but we'll go with it, just like the knee joint, we'll go with it when we found out it wasn't later. But then Debbie and I got in a plane. If you'll notice all these frauds, the second part always is, and Debbie and I got in a plane.
I was going to say, you went and saw it, you know, you went on location.
We went on location. So we went to Tanzania and we asked the former president of the National Museum of Tanzania, could we go into the vault and photograph all of the fossils found at Laetoli? Because I just wanted to look at the Lucy-type fossils. And he said, sure. So this is going to now be a three-hour process. He brings out the first one, LH1. It's a Lucy-type fossil. Here's LH2. It's a jaw of afarensis. Here's LH3. It's a tooth from afarensis. LH4. It's another jaw from Lucy-type. LH, you know, it goes on and on. You know, just going on and on. You could just be falling asleep while I'm taking all these photographs. And, you know, I was like, well, Johansson was right. There were no other hominids, because the LH means Laetoli L, hominid. Hominid means either an ape man or a human.
Okay.
Laetoli hominid 2, Laetoli hominid 3. Okay. So, yeah, he was right, you know. Well, when we got to Laetoli hominid 18, about an hour and a half into this, again, I had to pick up my jaw off the floor. What does he bring out? Is this fossil.
Whoa.
Laetoli hominid 18. It is Homo sapiens. The evolution scientists identify it as Homo sapiens. And his whole argument that Lucy was the only fossil found there is fraudulent, because he would have known about this. And let me tell you why he would have known about this skull. Number one, it was published in their literature by Mary Leakey. Mary Leakey found this. And so he would have seen it that way. Number two, after Mary Leakey closed down the Laetoli site, Dr. Johansson reopened it and dug for more Lucy-type fossils and added more fossils to the collection that we saw. And once you're adding, you know, fossils, you want to know what's in the collection. And I don't know what the number was at that point, if it was up to 40 or something, but he added a few more fossils, LH, you know, whatever number, 40 and LH42. He would have known that this fossil was there. And yet he wrote that no other animals were found at Laetoli other than the Lucy kind. Oh,
wow.
Except when I photographed this skull, and that is a fraudulent statement. That is his second fraud with Lucy, and his case basically is, you know, in the trash.
That's a human skull that we're looking
at. It's a human skull.
And so the other thing too, I think a lot of people may not understand this. All modern human skulls do not look alike. Like there's a lot of times we're presented with one particular human skull, but there's variation. You know, all dog skulls do not look alike, but they breed with one another. They're the same, you know, DNA, so to speak, and so on. So like, you know, don't get thrown off because, like, if a skull looks a little different than, you know, what you've been presented with in terms of what a modern human skull looks like, you know, that there is variation within species.
Yes. And if I showed you human skulls from all over the planet, they look like Neanderthal skulls. They look like Heidelberg skulls. They look like, you know, all these Homo erectus skulls.
And these are modern human skulls that you're talking about.
Yeah,
that look, people that just they look like, yeah.
People that just died in the last 100 years, and you take their skull out and it's like, man, that just looks like a Neanderthal. That looks like Homo heidelbergensis. That looks like, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
So yeah, this one has a little bit forehead slanting back and has a little bit big brow ridges, but I can show you, and actually it's in my book four, those skulls that are from modern humans, you know, dug up from modern human graves recently buried that look like this. So that's nothing. But the fact that there was a Homo sapiens at Laetoli, that made his statement fraudulent.
My goodness.
And then the third evidence that was fraudulent was this pelvis. This photograph comes from his book, From Lucy to Language. And he said, this is the pelvis of Lucy, okay? Now, you'd have to understand that human pelvises turn the blade of the ilium, turn forward 90 degrees. See, it starts out going out sideways, and then it turns 90 degrees, and you can feel it in your front, right under your belt, off to the side. That's the front of your pelvis. And apes are completely different. Apes have a pelvis that just goes out to the side. It never turns, okay? So humans turn forward, and apes go out to the side.
And that would probably have a lot to do with the walking upright versus,
yes,
is that right? Yeah. Versus walking on all fours.
Yeah. And that's how you can, that's the best, I think the best proof if an animal walked upright or not is to look at their pelvis, as long as it's not altered. You wouldn't want to let someone alter one of these pelvises, but
didn't happen here, right?
Oh no, no, no. Even though this is a lecture about fraud.
This is one of the ones that I am aware of is the Lucy, yeah, the Lucy pelvis.
But if you'll notice this picture, and in his book, he says evidence of walking upright, a curved human pelvis. Okay. Now you look here, see how this is real bone.
Yeah.
But look over here. This is white plaster.
Oh, okay.
See, and they never found the right pelvis, but they did find the sacrum and this bone. See how it's all, but if you have to give it to them, this looks like a human pelvis that turns forward. And so, yeah, Lucy walked upright. It would be hard to conclude anything unless you pulled off seven layers. And I'll show you the seven layers that I pulled off. First, we photographed a copy of the bones of Lucy at the Chicago Field Museum. And here it is, the Lucy pelvis, but you can't see it here on this picture, but it doesn't turn forward. It's flat like on this plane of the display case. And that doesn't look anything like the pelvis that we were just shown. But this is Lucy's pelvis.
Yeah, that looks a lot different.
Yeah. And then another layer we peeled off is then we were at Berkeley. And again, this is plaster copy. And we asked Dr. Howell who did that chart. We asked him to hold the pieces together naturally. And in other words, take this piece and attach it to here and hold them naturally. And guess what? It's even worse. It goes out to the side. It doesn't turn forward at all. Then the next peel of the onion is, then we went to the Institute of Human Origins, where Dr. Johansson has his business going on there. And they have a display of the Lucy skeleton. These are plaster, but they have it in display how they were actually found.
Wow.
And you'll notice this is shot from the side. Like if I approach you from the side and photograph your left side, the pelvis, it coming right out towards the camera.
Yeah,
it doesn't
flat.
Turn
it's
far.
Just dead flat.
Dead flat. Dead flat. Dead flat. And yet it ended up being round. Now
and bigger. Am I right? It looks bigger now.
No, that's just from me putting it in there and blowing it up. I just wanted to show you the detail of how beautiful.
Well, the part of the, I don't know, part of that looks bigger to me for some, on the right side, not just from being blown up.
Well, you know what? You might be right. Cause
did they stretch or embellish that in some way? Cause it just looks like the shape of it is more elongated.
AJ, don't be such a doubting Thomas, please.
Until I put my finger in the fossil, I will not believe.
You should. For this field, you should. So Dr. Johansson had a problem. When he found the original bones of Lucy, the pelvis, it looked like a chimpanzee pelvis.
Shocker.
He admitted it. He said it went out flat like a chimpanzee. The original fossils did not turn forward like a human. He said it went out flat. And he said, well, how could that be? Because the knee, which is human, which is really not, he just made that up, it has a human-like knee, so we know she walked upright, so she wouldn't have an ape pelvis. So she must have bent her pelvis after she died. She fell into the water, and maybe some animal stepped on the pelvis and changed it from a chimp pelvis to a human pelvis when some animal walked on the bones. That's a stretch. And so he says, well, how can we prove this? And so on Nova television, he shows how he could reshape the pelvis. And he takes a saw, basically. Now he takes the plaster copy, and he cuts it.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, hold on, because he's trying to change it from flat to round. And then he has to, the pieces still don't work to turn forward. So then he has to grind them, grind the edges, and then he has to glue them. And then lo and behold, the pelvis turns forward. And that's where it ends up as.
You know, but I think I saw the actual video that you're talking about, because it's like a real old video from like the 70s or 80s or something. And they describe this process. And the way they do it, I mean, it's a pro, you know, their evolution video. I mean, their evolutionists made it or whatever. But, you know, he says, the narrator, you know, Dr. Johansson, he found the fossil, and something just wasn't quite right because it looked like a monkey pelvis. And so he took out his grinder, and in the background, you hear the grinder. And they leave it play. I mean, it's going for 30 seconds or a minute of while they're talking and narrating. It's really comical.
It's comical.
I don't think they meant it to be that way, but it really... No,
which shows their blindness that they would even have the guts to put that on national TV. But here's the deal. It's just not good science to change a chimp pelvis shape into a human pelvis and then claim that that proves that it walks upright. That's not good science. But what is fraudulent about this, AJ, is this picture from his book. See, this picture indicates that this is all real bone. You could see where the vein marks are and the texture of the bone, but this is not real bone. This is a plaster that he cut, ground, bent.
My goodness.
Now, here's the fraud part. He should have put white plaster, and then left the whole thing as a different color because this is all plaster. But what he does is he cuts it, shapes it, and then he paints it to look like it came out of the ground this.
Yeah. Well, in my mind's eye, I know, you know, you're more speaking from the paleontological perspective, but in my mind's eye, from just kind of your average, I am an educated person. I mean, I've been through academia, but, I don't feel like that should count as it should null and void. If you have to do that level of work to something, I mean, it shouldn't be, counted, as a legitimate fossil. in my mind's eye, let alone proof for some speculative, imaginative theory.
And then throw in the fact that, you know, there's all these frauds.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And then throw in the fact that, you know, Lucy's skeleton is ape-sized brain, ape long arm bones, ape short leg bones, ape curved fingers, ape flat feet, ape barrel chest. All the features of Lucy look ape.
Now,
except the ones that they said weren't, but they were all fraudulent statements.
I don't know. Are you going to show the hands and the feet? Didn't he?
No.
I don't know if that would count as another fraud with Lucy.
No, I'm going to stick with the hard frauds. I don't know.
Because he did. They didn't find the hands and the feet. Correct me if I'm wrong on this with Lucy. And so they put human hands and feet on the skeleton.
Yeah, they got like one toe bone and maybe one finger bone. But they had found other Lucy bones in Tanzania that they pulled and put into that skeleton. And you know, it's artistic license, and you're pulling bones from other Lucy skeletons. And so, yeah, the whole thing becomes, what do they call that when you amalgamate many different animals into one? And then that becomes tenuous. Well, how do you even know that these are all the same species?
Because that was one thing with Lucy. You know, this goes back now probably almost 20 years to my seminary days, but I had the luxury of having a class on, human origin or something like that. But they covered a couple of the supposed human ancestors. And one of the things they told us about Lucy in there was that the bones were found, some of the bones weren't found in that location, the same location.
Yes.
They were found. What I heard was a mile apart. Like it was a giant radius. I mean, am I correct in saying that with some of these pieces, or?
Well, the knee joint was not found near the Lucy skeleton. That's for sure.
So that's another thing, doesn't that kind of like?
That's questionable.
Questionable, right?
Yep. And then, you know, the Lucy skeleton was spread out over the surface of the ground. So then that's less, you know, believable, the whole thing is terrible. But what is really terrible is that he felt comfortable doing these frauds and adds to this evidence that this whole human evolution thing, number one, was created by artificial means, mistakes and frauds, and number two, is collapsed. And if AJ, if this is the best evidence for evolution, because that's where we started, you know, all the other fossil groups don't show evolution, but this is the best evidence. If this is the best evidence, and it's going to take me 5 hours to go through the falseness of it.
Yeah.
That's your best.
Yeah. This is the creme de la creme of the evolutionary community.
Which then brings you to the point is the entire theory of naturalism has collapsed with this added evidence.
Yeah.
And 2024, all people who believe in creation can say confidently that naturalism died this year. And, you know, the evolution scientists will never accept that, but it's true. I mean, I have the evidence for that. I don't know what else you really need to have proof, but at some level you have to accept, okay, look at the majority of the evidence. We can't go look at every detail of every new fossil, but just the big patterns, it's over.
Oh, yeah. I'm not holding the funeral. Out. I can care less that it's dead. I mean, I just think that we need the coroner, you know, to come out publicly and acknowledge that it's dead, because it's very clear how speculative this is. And I think what I would just ask from, you know, maybe skeptics of creation, skeptics of God, skeptics of Christianity, of Jesus, of that, is to really look at if you do buy into evolution, to really give an honest look at what we're saying here, and don't just gaslight people, because I think that's kind of what goes on. You get that glazed over look, like, oh, you're crazy. You're one of those crazy creationists. But you have to look at this stuff honestly. And you know, if I were to be a believer, just like people, you know, sometimes they say, I'm a doubting Thomas. And like, I want to see evidence. I want to see something substantive. And we don't get that. You know, we don't get that. In my mind's eye, I think that there's two, let me switch to another camera angle here. I think that there's two big pieces of the creationist argument. I think you have this that we're talking about now, which is really an incredible lack of evidence for evolution. You also mentioned in your last video stasis in the fossil record, which is basically how you have animals the same in the lowest layers as modern animals. Like you see this in many instances. Somebody, I couldn't tell you the name, wrote a book recently of like over 200 cases of this, you know, whether it's crocodiles or horseshoe crabs or jellyfish or, you know, different modern creatures that we find unchanged, completely unchanged for millions and millions and millions of years. A rational, sane human being would say if this evolutionary process is working itself out with all creatures, that you wouldn't see that at all. That would be a really rare, crazy anomaly. But you see so much of that that, you know, it pokes a hole in evolution. So I think there's the fossil record side of it. Then there's also the geological side, where the geological column, I had a PhD, Dr. Clary from which Creation Institute is he from? From ICR. I think he's from ICR. Yeah.
I think so.
So he goes over the geologic column and talks about how, look, these rock layers that are here, this is not millions and millions of years of slow accumulation of material. This is sedimentary rock, you know, that was laid down by water. So I think those two pieces right there make you go, okay, evolution isn't true. And the geologic column does not come from millions of years, but it seems to have come from a catastrophic incident, i.e. a flood, a global flood. That really gets your mind going in a whole different direction in terms of human origins, like purpose of life, why are we here? And really it kind of opens up that big question, like, is the Bible true? Is it accurate? Does it give us an accurate picture? We're told by the scientific community that this is just a book of myths and fables, but all of a sudden it's starting to look a lot more realistic, you know? So mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. where a lot of this leads, and a lot of the information that you've presented, you know, it just, it really reveals that in what we've been told about science, that it's supposedly this objective thing that we're taught in our secular school systems from the time that we're children. Not so much. And my hope is that an objective person sees this. They see, you know, the Lucy pelvis. They see, you know, Homo habilis and supposedly these missing, like, this. No. This is very speculative. We should see, like, much clearer evidence, and we should see it much more abundantly if this was true. Am I right in saying that?
That is exactly correct. Yeah, that is a good synopsis of what should be seen and what our response should be to what this evidence is like, you have to step back and say, okay, if we can't form the universe, we can't form life, the fossil record doesn't show it, then the only other choice is that we were created. And if we were created, who is a creator? How does he want us to live? And we need to get back on the page of the book, you know. And this is where the joy part comes in, because, AJ, when I was in college, before age 19, before I received this bet, I was the most miserable person on the planet. I had total freedom, and I was so miserable, as are many young people, as are many people in your audience, so miserable. And once I realized that, you know, this was a made up story, man, I became the happiest person on life. You know, because like all of a sudden, like I got a new lease on life, you know. And, you know, that's the thing about Christianity. It's like everybody is welcome. I don't care if you are a low life, if you murdered, you're a prostitute, whatever. Everybody is welcome at the table, and you know, God's made provision to bring everybody back in. So this is the greatest joyous story that you'll ever hear. And you just got to go from here, this point, to here. Now that's the hard part. That one, that part, making that decision to become a Christian, even though I knew it was right, I couldn't do it. It took me, it was like a slugfest for 9 months, 6 months. I'm serious. I did not want to do it. I just like, I'm going to give up all my freedom, which has caused me to be miserable. I'm going to become the, you know, I just envisioned God would be sending me off to be a missionary in Nigeria. The worst case scenario.
Well, you kind of are, though. I mean, you've gone and traveled the world studying, and now you're proclaiming the, you know, I always look at Acts chapter 17, where Paul is talking to the pagans in Athens. And Paul, he makes just a brief off-the-cuff statement there. He says that God, all men are descended from one man, you know. And I think, like, he's looking at their pagan narrative, and he's projecting the gospel. He's laying the God. So I think you kind of are doing that, brother. I think you're kind of a missionary. You're doing the same thing that Paul did by, you know, he traveled the world studying the facts and proclaiming the gospel about evolution is garbage.
At least I didn't end up in New Delhi bearing, you know, dead bodies of the poor like Mother Teresa. That's what I was envisioning. Okay, if I become a Christian,
well, Paul did. Yeah, he was eventually beheaded. So maybe, maybe the way things are going in culture today, maybe you will eventually will. Let's not count it out quite yet.
It sounds good. Yeah,
and one could only hope. You know, a real Christian could only hope to one day.
Yeah. No, this is a story of joy, and this is why I willingly devote myself to this question, because it's Amen. The biggest question of our lifetime. It's the biggest question for each person in this audience. You know, were you created? Is there God? And if the answer is probably so, then you better start looking. You don't want to just put this question off till your last breath, because maybe something will happen before you get to that last breath. This is a time to grab this thing. It's right here at the show, you know, grab what's obvious.
Amen.
And you know, the truth is the truth, and you know, get off the lie train, you know?
Yeah, please do. Please be objective. You know, and this isn't, you know, evolution creation is not a salvation issue. It's not like somebody isn't a Christian. But I think, you know, you and I both know this narrative, this modern pagan narrative, severely undercuts the gospel, severely. And plus, it's just not true. I mean, really, even if you just look at it from a scientific perspective, you know, I think there's a lot of, wow, there's a lot of speculation going on here. And just really, you know, my hope, my plea just to those maybe who, maybe somebody's never heard this information before, just please give it an honest look, because, you know, we're actually not crazy people out here. I mean, we're like, you know, we're crazy for Jesus, but we just want you to be honest. We want to see honesty and integrity in the scientific community. You know, maybe then look at where some of that information points you, you know, to Jesus. So, Dr. Carl, thank you so much for joining us today. And maybe too, so awesome. This isn't our last episode together, but I'll have you on again maybe. And because there's, so. I mean, at least at my count, there's like 148 fossils left to go. So, honestly, we're going to have to make a whole bunch of those 5 minute long short videos.
Yes, and everybody in the audience needs to go to my website and log on to the streaming on demand. You can watch these videos for like $4 or so. I don't know what it is to rent the videos. And watch these episodes of The Frauds, and you can see the rest of the 138. And each one is as stunning as what I just told you, or even more stunning, you know?
Amen. Amen. Well, God bless you, my friend, and thanks everybody else for tuning in. I guess we'll see you in the next episode.
Thank you.
God bless you. Oh, and one last thing. I want you to know that you know Jesus. So if you'd like to, leave a comment or send me a message so that I can help you do just that, because the gospel is the power of God unto salvation for everyone who believes.